Hello, and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, the podcast about all things eDiscovery and legal tech, hosted by two gals who are currently both sipping on something very fun. Anyways, we're your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. And today we are talking about information governance, the information governance reference model, which is IGRM, which, by the way, I have to admit, I didn't really even know that was a thing. Like, I didn't know it had its own acronym. But anyway, it's its own animal that's attached to the EDRM, which we all know because that's been the whole series that we're doing. Oh, and by the way, official announcement. This is officially, I mean, not this episode because we have one more, but this topic is officially the end of the EDRM series.
We've come so far.
I know. We saved the InfoGov for the very end. This is exciting. I can't believe it. Oh, by the way, this is another thing that I need to mention before we even get started talking about this. Angie and I are both in the EDRM 2.0 think tank group. I don't know what it's really called. And we are envisioning a new way of depicting the EDR model.
Yeah. Did I say that? And modernizing it, right? Yeah, to account for a lot of these new data sources. But it's so cool because it's a worldwide group of people. Like, there are folks on our calls that are like from Japan and England and, you know, all over the world. And it's so cool to hear how people from different countries are dealing with their data.
Yeah. Well, and there's people from different aspects of the e-discovery industry. There's practitioners, there's vendors, there's people that work in law firms, there's people that work in corporations. Like, there's a lot of different roles that are represented. So I think it's going to be fantastic. But the reason I bring that up is because InfoGov, information governance, is a wheel right now that's at the very beginning of the EDRM model. And we foresee it being something that's really encompassing the entire model, or maybe it's at the beginning and the end. Like, I don't know the best way to depict that. I guess we'll see. The point being that everything that we talk about within information governance affects everything that we're able to do with eDiscovery. So that's why it's important. But before we get to that, Angie, you said something about drinking something fun. You got something going on over there?
Oh, yes, I do. I love Guinness. Love, love, love. I swear that some of my happiest memories are like landing in Ireland and going and like that first sip of Guinness. And so I have a Guinness right now. It's cold out. It feels like beer weather to me.
Oh my God. I'm loving it. Well, it's not cold here, but I'm pretty sure it's always beer weather in Texas. So
that's true. It's every weather is beer weather.
Yeah, but this is one area that surprisingly, Angie, you and I are not eye to eye on. I am not a big Guinness drinker.
I knew we would find something to disagree about one day.
Who knew? I did not know this was going to be it. But I will say I'll take my Guinness and make some beef stew with it because that's friggin' delicious, especially if you put it in a bread bowl. I'm all in. You drink all the Guinness you want. I will eat it up in some bread.
Oh my God. I know. I can't explain why. I'm not pregnant. I will preface this by saying that. But I was.
Well, good. You're drinking beer.
Well, for whatever reason, maybe like 3 days ago, I was sitting on my kitchen floor. I have a toddler, so I eat a lot of food on like sitting on the floor. I don't know. It happens that way. And can't explain why, but I was like, I would actually murder someone for some corned beef right now.
Oh my God. I was actually craving pastrami, and that's weird.
Yes,
I was like, I want a big fat Reuben, like dripping in sauerkraut on some marble rye, like thick and toasted and buttery. Like, I could get all into that. And I almost bought all the ingredients from the store, and my husband's like, don't do it because it's never the same as when you go to a deli and it's freshly sliced and they slice it so thin and pile it so high. And I'm not even a real big meat person, but like that, I can get super into.
Oh my God.
Mustard. So good.
So we also eat a lot of chicken nuggets in this household right now. So we go to a butcher for our adult meat, right?
So you go to a butcher for your chicken nuggets.
No, for our adult meat.
Kind of bougie nuggets is
what? They also, I'm making a bougie, right? Because they gave us this Carolina Gold, like seeded mustard, and it is so good. And so I've been dipping my chicken nuggets into this extra fancy mustard.
Sure, so they're bougie nuggets.
They are bougie nuggets. So anyways, what are you drinking?
Oh, well, I'm having my vodka soda, which is kind of business as usual, but I do have a little island umbrella straw coming out of it. Why? Because I don't get to go on vacation like some people, and I just need to pretend like I am on vacation just for a moment. I need to get away. But yeah, I don't know. I like to do little things like that to feel fun. And it's also, I always do this whenever my husband and my child are away too. I'm like, oh, that's weird. It's like mommy vacation.
I think that is a form of vacation, having the house to yourself.
Heck yeah. Isn't that movie Risky Business where Tom Cruise sails yes. in his socks and his tidy whities?
Yes.
I probably shouldn't do that because I'd trip and fall and break my ankle. The feeling is there mentally.
Oh my God. There is something. So we are like a closed door bathroom household. But whenever I have the house to myself, I'll leave the bathroom door open and I feel like such a rebel.
I'm like, oh my God, I'm just out there right now.
I know. I'm like, I'm just out there. I'm just doing my business.
Yeah.
Well, door open.
You know what? I was so out there the other day. For our anniversary, we went to go stay at a hotel downtown Houston, which is one of my favorite. Actually, you've been there, the JW Marriott.
Yeah.
It's this big bathroom and I was coming off the toilet and walking as I'm pulling up my pants, not realizing there's a big old window in the bathroom that is open and looks directly into a law firm where a friend of mine works. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm pretty sure there's like a meeting going on right now. Everybody just saw me in my underwear. I mean, hopefully my underwear had made it by the time that anybody could see like, what I was doing. I'm like, oh my God. So I text her right away. I'm like, you have to let me know. Is there anybody in a conference room on such
Did
and
I
such
moon
floor?
Anyone?
And she's like, girl, it happens all the time. I'm like, poor people. How do you concentrate watching people come off the potty?
God, you're like, glaze those windows or something.
Like, that's
this
a cruel
is clearly
joke.
A problem.
Maybe we should take this as a cue to move on.
Yeah, maybe this
info.
Yeah, that's our cue. So let's move
some
this
some privacy issues here.
Oh my God, different kind of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move it along. And like Bree said, today we are talking about information governance. I'm also absolutely going to slip and start calling this InfoGov. Just know that, I guess, listeners going forward. But let's start off by defining it. So InfoGov is... it's a framework of policies, procedures, and technologies that an organization implements to manage and control the information it creates, receives, maintains, and disposes of, and doing this all in a way that meets the legal, regulatory, operational, and risk management requirements of that organization. I realize that is an incredibly, incredibly wordy definition, and that is why we will be posting a Learn the Lingo with this as our term, because...
Oh, yeah.
It's basically, how does an organization deal with its data is what it boils down to. Anyone who wants to go to edrm.net and look at their information governance reference model, you absolutely should. It's A, it's beautiful, and B, it's very informative. Anyway, so here's what we're going to do today. We are going to talk about the IGRM, which is the InfoGov reference model, and its intersection with e-discovery. We're going to talk about information governance just as a practice. Then we're going to talk about how you build a cross-functional team, and some challenges and trends that folks are facing today. We're going to hit everything at kind of a high level today, and that is because in a couple of weeks, we are going to have a very, very prolific guest on mm-hmm. our podcast. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that.
I'm super excited
about
it. But
we'll do a deep
it.
Dive that day. She is yeah. one of the nation's best.
I think she might have invented InfoGov.
Possibly, yes, possibly.
Yeah, she definitely has a great handle on it. You know, this is an important topic because it literally affects everything in the e-discovery world. And we kind of know that, but I don't know that we always appreciate how much. Really, if you think about it, when we are trying to go out and collect data or review data, what have you, we can't ever... really e-discover what doesn't exist. And the reason why it exists in the first place is because there's some sort of info governance policy or plan allows it to.
Sometimes when people say something doesn't exist, my millennial girl brain goes, the limit does not exist. Like
oh,
from Mean Girls.
I'm like, why are you laughing at me right now? I did not say anything funny.
Oh, nothing. My weird brain just does things that make me have inappropriate reactions.
Oh my goodness. Well, and the other reason why, I mean, and I say that it affects everything that we do in e-discovery. That's very large and vague statement. And some people even get Mean Girl references from it, apparently. You know, we're dealing with a lot of information, a lot of data when we're a company. It's important that we know our data. We know who is involved with saving data or drafting data and editing data in certain locations, who can access it. What does it contain? Does it contain sensitive information, personal information, health information, regulatory information? What's its life cycle? How long can it exist? When was it born and when will it die? It's really all of those questions are becoming more and more important every day because they don't just affect e-discovery. They affect so many different things for an organization.
So let's talk about the IGRM. So the IGRM has a few core principles. The first of which is that most information management efforts are crippled by insufficient collaboration among key stakeholders. This is such a pet passion of mine. I love collaboration among stakeholders. It makes me so happy. The stakeholders that the IGRM identifies, they group them into three different categories. So that is business users who need the information to operate the organization. Number two, IT departments who have to implement the mechanics of information management. And number three, the legal, risk, and regulatory departments who understand the organization's duty to preserve information beyond its immediate business value. So to recap, we've got business users, IT departments, and legal. Those are the folks you need involved in your InfoGov formation. Second thing I want to flag here is that the IGRM has elements to it. And so the goal of the IGRM is to provide a framework for a unified governance approach by showing how the value of information and your duty to maintain it are linked together.
If you look very closely at the InfoGov wheel, there are different slices. There are five to be exact. And so I'm going to go through them just very high level to explain. One of them is business, which represents profit. The line of business determines what data is useful and what data is required to drive profit for the organization. The business piece also kind of works in conjunction with data retention. When is this data needed and when is it no longer needed? And when it's no longer needed, it must go. Yep. Another segment of the wheel is privacy and security, which represents a risk factor. This is the portion of the pie, like the pizza, the pie, where we reflect on the protection of sensitive information from unauthorized access. So that's where you talk about your PII, your personal information, your HII, your health information, all that sort of thing. Another piece of the pie is IT, which is representing efficiency. It's IT's role in the info governance structure to streamline the data, making it easier for organizations to access and use information. Then we have the RIM. Is that how you say it? The records information management, or another risk factor. It's this piece of the pie that talks about mitigating risks associated with our data, like data breaches and legal disputes and operational deficiencies. It's their large responsibility to ensure regulatory obligations within data retention are being met and followed. This is also where you'd find things like auditing of all of your different data practices. And then finally, we have the legal slice. This is the one that has the pineapples and ham and jalapenos.
Oh, no. Get the pineapples off of my pizza. Get them off of it. Goodness. They do not belong there. I will die on this hill.
I like pineapple. See, we're finding out all kinds of things that are different.
I know. We don't like Guinness or pineapples on pizza. John is very, John gets very excited when I go out of town and he gets to order Hawaiian pizza.
Oh my God. Well, I don't like the ham. I do, like, I'll do it with pepperoni. Like, I'll do pepperoni, pineapple, and jalapeno. That's a good mix.
Oh man. Nope. I do not.
Anywho's, the legal or the risk part of the pie is important because this is where we discuss adhering to local and regulatory requirements like privacy laws and industry specific regulations. Also, when all those little legal concerns like legal hold come into play.
Oh, those little legal concerns.
Yep. That everybody thinks is little and it's just a little itty bitty piece of the pizza. But no,
So that kind of gives us a good like background of what the IGRM is and what InfoGov is. I want to pivot us to talk about how this relates to e-discovery. So when we start doing e-discovery, we can really only work with the information that's available. And our information governance policies and procedures are going to dictate what information is available. For example, your retention schedules are going to govern how long data is going to be kept within the organization. So that will affect the scope of the data that you're going to be dealing with in your e-discovery process. If your retention period is only 3 years and you only have data going back that far, but you get sued and somebody wants to talk to you about something that happened a decade ago, I don't know what statute of limitations you're dealing with there, but regardless, you're not going to have a ton of data about that because your retention policy has dictated that you get rid of it.
So long as you followed your retention policies.
Correct. Correct. We'll put a pin in that. And then also, when you are doing InfoGov, I guess that's a verb. When you're infogoving, you're going to be classifying your data, which means you're going to be organizing it based on its sensitivity and its importance. This might mean that you end up having a data map, which connects all data to its location, to its system administrator, et cetera. And so you might have a map of sort of what data even exists within your organization when you start doing e-discovery. You might also have some sort of flag on your InfoGov system or your data map that says if there is like personally identifying information or PII or other like sensitive, confidential, maybe proprietary information, that might be flagged there too. And there might be different access controls that govern those types of information, right? One last thing I want to close out with. So apart from your InfoGov dictating what data is actually available, any legal hold that you implement will override those policies. It should take precedence over all your InfoGov policies and basically put a pause on any routine deletion that or disposal that would happen otherwise in the normal course of business.
Yeah, super important point. As we are talking about collaborating, who are we talking about collaborating with? Who are on
Everyone.
These teams? I know, the whole world. I mean, by the way, this is not just your soapbox. Like, I get on the soapbox all the time, too. I just think it's funny because I'm like, oh, people probably think that we both are annoying as heck. But that's all right, because this is important. And people don't always have the right idea of how to do this well, which, by the way, our guest coming soon is probably the master of this craft, and she is going to be amazing, giving us some insights.
The mistress of it, I think.
Ooh.
The czar.
So, but who are the peeps? Okay, so first let's talk about IT. IT are the keepers of the data, and they are also the keepers of all of the policies involving, well, not all of them, but a lot of the policies involving the usage of data. For example, they're the ones that are concerned with change management. What happens when, you know, Angie gets her new iPhone? What happens when Brie gets a new laptop? What happens when the application is sunset and we need to replace it with something that's newer? What are the different policies that are involved there? What are the different approvals that need to happen? How are we considering things like legal hold and data retention? They're also in charge of things like onboarding. When we have a new employee, what are they allowed to do? What are the different parameters that we put on their PCs and their phones that allow them to do things or not do things? And what kinds of applications do they have access to? And then they're also ones that are going to be involved with data mapping. What exactly do we have as an organization, and where is it, and who's using it? All right, so another team, compliance. They are the ones that are going to be talking to us about risk. They are constantly assessing risk and protecting data according to the policies that have been established by other departments or themselves. Like, legal hold is usually a policy that gets established by our legal folks, but it needs to play a part in a lot of different policies. We can't have a data retention plan or policy without thinking about, well, what happens when it's on legal hold. We can't have a change management policy unless we're asking, well, I mean, I guess we can, it's just a disaster. We can't have a successful change management policy unless it includes things like, hey, what happens if it's a legal hold? You get what I'm trying to say. Legal hold kind of needs to find its way in every policy, but then can be a policy all on its own. A policy about a policy. Why not?
It's like a turducken.
Exactly. And then compliance or risk folks, they're going to be auditing these policies to make sure that everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing and they're getting dinged if they're out of line. They're also going to be handling records management. They're the ones that are going to like, what are the things that we have Iron Mountain? Why do we have 50,000 million boxes? And how long have they been there? What's in them?
Pre-med.
Can we, yeah, Can we please get rid of them? It's been 20 years or more. And then they're the ones that are also dealing with data retention. You know, they might be spearheading the retention policy, but then hopefully working with other teams as to how to implement that data retention. Then we have the privacy team. What about these guys and gals? They're the ones that are looking into data mapping and the governance of data mapping. Where is our data for privacy reasons? This is when we need to make sure that we're in compliance with privacy regulations like GDPR and CCPA and all those acronyms that we've heard a lot about. Then we have the data security team. These are the folks that usually work under your CISO, your chief information officer. They're going to be the ones assessing things like cyber breach. What happens? What did happen that caused the breach? They're going to be the ones that are governing accessibility of your data. Who has the right to log on to what system and be mapped to what system? They're going to be likely involved in investigations, like in doing in forensic investigations and have those investigative tools and policies. They're also going to be a really good resource to let you know hidden locations where data is that you never thought about. So you want to have them on your good side, or you want to be on their good side, probably is a better way to look at that. But when we are talking about bringing the team together, we're breaking down those silos. No longer should teams work in silos, just independent of one another. There should be commingling, shall we say. And who doesn't like a good co-mingling effort? There should be cross-training. Hey, I shouldn't be the only one that understands legal hold. Every single one of these people needs to understand legal hold. Just like I need to understand data security. I need to understand privacy. Everybody needs to understand what everybody else is doing with our data so that we're not stepping on each other's toes. And you can't really properly understand what everybody's doing unless you're keeping a constant communication flow open. We need to make sure we're cross-checking those policies. If you guys are adding something new to your policy, then make sure you pass it through the other peeps and make sure it doesn't cause any problems for them. And there should be approval processes that should include everyone if they're affected, right? If you're going to change policies, who needs to approve that? If you're going to do certain tasks, who needs to approve that? Think about everybody involved and who it might affect. All right, so I've talked about some of the people that are involved, but there are challenges that we have to overcome as well. So, Angie, why don't you take us through some of the privacy and legal obligations that we need to consider as we're overcoming those challenges?
Ooh, I would love to. So there are a number of privacy regulations out there, and different regulations will apply depending on where you and or your data is geographically located. So a couple of the big ones are the GDPR, or the General Data Protection Regulation, which applies in Europe. And then there's also the California Consumer Privacy Act, or the CCPA. A lot of other states either have privacy laws that are on the books, are waiting to be signed into law, or that are proposed legislation. So I think we should expect to see a wave of these kind of come into being over the next year or two. And you as a practitioner will need to know what laws apply to your data. And it might depend on where your data is located. It might depend on where your people are located. You're going to have to look to the laws of your jurisdiction to figure that out. But I flag that because all of these privacy regulations, they impact the type, like how you store the data that you have. So if you have data that is subject to these regulations, they might dictate how you store them, how you access them, how you interact with them, work with them, when you can or can't produce them, how you can and can't produce them. You know, transferring data cross-jurisdictionally can be really challenging if that data is subject to any of these privacy regulations. So some of the things that organizations are dealing with these days are, you know, inconsistent legal requirements across jurisdictions. Imagine if you have data that's housed in California, in Europe, you know, in China and elsewhere. All of these places are going to have their own regulations, and all of them are going to dictate how you can do business in those areas. You might have conflicting obligations. You might have differing definitions of personal data, different types of enforcement or penalties. But what a big struggle that some organizations have, especially global ones or ones that operate in multiple countries, is trying to have global consistency, balancing that against local compliance. And so a lot of organizations will take whatever the most restrictive law is and then just apply that organization wide. But regardless, you know, depending on the size of your organization, where you operate, I flag this so that you can take it into consideration when developing your information governance strategy, because they are important. And then one other thing I'll flag is a lot of places will have restrictions on the way that you can transfer data, whether and how you transfer data out of that area. This is especially true across country borders. If you're trying to move data in that way, you're going to want to talk to somebody who's familiar with the particular restrictions on those two countries.
Legal and privacy challenges or obligations are definitely important. They're top of the list of things that we want to consider, but there are some other challenges here as well, right? So I talked already about the siloed departments and the siloed teams and who those people are. And that really is a challenge. It's a huge challenge because there's no cross communication going on between those folks. So nobody's collaborating on things. And one group might be making a policy or a workflow that all of a sudden completely derails the other group from what they're trying to accomplish. So that really is at the top of my list in terms of challenges. And trying to figure out ways that you can overcome that is a huge investment of time and worth it. One way of doing that is when you're creating IT policies, HR policies, compliance policies, legal policies, wherever policies you're creating, that you might want to consider having a board of people. I know nobody wants to have a meeting about meetings and whatever, but this is important. You want to have somebody who can represent each group sitting in on a conversation where they have skin in the game and they understand how the work is done by the end users and can speak with intelligence about, hey, if you do that in your policy, it's going to completely jack up what's happening in our policy. So maybe we need to rethink this and get on the same page. Like, there needs to be that communication, and it's super important. And a lot of times companies don't even have that conversation, or if they have that conversation, they don't include the end users that are actually doing the work. When we don't consider the end users, a lot of times we're just kind of creating a cycle of policies that are completely useless because they can't actually be implemented in real life. We also want to think about things like bring your own device procedures. In fact, we're going to have an episode on mobile devices, and we'll talk about this at length about bringing your own device. This is one of those areas where you're setting the expectations for your employees about what you are able to do and what you're not able to do. And you're also talking about what's mine and what's yours and what our expectations are going to be in terms of the data that you have on your mobile device. Another challenge is lack of chain of custody protocol. Oh my good gracious. I cannot even tell you how much of a friggin' soapbox I get on about this, and I will spare everyone. Angie's already looking like she wants to shoot herself in the face, and nobody wants that. If you do not consider chain of custody in things like employee termination or change of devices or when someone is on legal hold, it's a huge problem not to communicate that to one another, because you're going to end up having a manager or an HR representative or an IT desk person, help desk person, who's going to not be aware of the policy or not be aware of the workflow and completely trash data on accident, not because of bad intention. They just think they're doing their job as usual, but it's putting you guys in a very vulnerable position. So chain of custody is huge. Reactive versus proactive legal teams. This is a big problem, right? So a lot of times corporate legal, because your hair is on fire 24/7 and you're having to deal with all the weird ass things that get thrown at you because people are crazy and business is crazy. You have no way of predicting, you know, maybe I'm dealing with blueberries today. Maybe tomorrow I'm dealing with a website. Maybe I'm dealing with an angry customer the next day. And maybe I'm dealing with Jack and Jill at the water cooler the next day. Like,
what variety? Blueberries is where we started.
I know. I actually did have to have a lawsuit involving blueberries one time. I'm like, what in the whole wide world? I do not work in produce. Like, how did this come about?
Anyway. Did not sign up for this.
No, there's so many things that can cross your desk, which is what makes your job exciting and fun and why a lot of people stick with it. Like, that's great. But it's also a big reason why a lot of legal departments are not proactive. When we talk about things like being proactive, we're talking about have a game plan, have a workflow, already think ahead. Like, what are the kinds of things that we're going to deal with? Already thinking through some of that is going to help you tremendously. termination workflows. I already mentioned that a little bit, but just in thinking about terminated employees on legal hold, people will generally consider the low-hanging fruit, like, hey, probably should keep their email, probably should lock down their drive. Okay, yeah, that's good. And it's even better if you can lock down their PC. That's good if they have a laptop or whatever, or a device. But what happens if that employee is involved in an internal investigation and you need to do things like capture their web history for the last 30 days or 60 days? Because, you know, that's very transitory. It's not going to be around forever. And if you don't do it now, it might not be available to you when it's important. Or what about that voicemail that's like super 1992, but somebody actually left him a bunch of voicemails about some stuff that's relevant to this matter? Who's getting that?
Oh my God. If anyone leaves me a voicemail, I'm like, ugh.
I left my voicemail on full on purpose, and I feel like a bad person because if you call me, it'll be like, this voicemail box is full. I don't care. Judge me. Judge the hell out of me because I cannot listen to voicemail anymore. And so thinking about being proactive, there is a thing called proactive investigations. Like, hey, it's funny. We keep getting ourselves in a lot of drama when somebody of a certain role leaves our organization and then takes all of our clients with them and they cost us money. This is a reoccurring problem. So how can we proactively investigate if this happens? Maybe we just have a termination workflow for those kinds of people where we're doing routine checks of, what did you download from Salesforce? Or what did you download from the super important application that we keep as a company where only our company secrets are held that you weren't supposed to download? What did you print? What is in your purge?
What did you do?
Do we have any kind of surveillance software where we can see things like, hey, did you move a bunch of data all of a sudden on your last day or the last 2 weeks after you gave your notice or right before you gave your notice? Did you purge a big, huge, you know, block of data all of a sudden? It's like totally not normal for your business behavior. Those kinds of proactive investigations may save you tremendously in the long run, because you can investigate it while the data is still here. First of all, that's crucial, but you can find those red flags quickly and jump on them before it's too late. Other challenges, non-compliance with retention policies. That is so huge. This is the one that is going to get you in the most trouble ever, is if you have a compliance policy and everybody's ignoring it. Like, yeah. Mom and dad told me to do my chores, but like, they're going to be cool when the floor is dirty. No, they're not. Like, the judge is not going to be cool when she finds crumbs. You're not supposed to have these. What is happening here? And why in the world are you guys breaching your own written down policy that everybody's agreed to? Like, no, sanctions for everyone. You're all paying for this and nobody's getting their allowance.
You get a sanction.
And clean those crumbs up. I mean, Angie's eating dinner on the floor. This is important. Not auditing the correct controls. This is huge because there's things that get audited all the time just as like, you know, routine. But there's also things that involve legal that a lot of times people are afraid to audit, because who wants to mess with the attorneys, especially when they can, like, I don't know, do investigations on your phone. But you want to audit e-discovery practices. Like, that's important. Or chain of custody practices. Are we actually doing what's in our chain of custody policy? Are we actually, you know, collecting data as we've agreed to collect data in our legal hold policies? Are we doing that? That's important, because if we've written down a policy and we're not following it, that shows nothing but we're a bunch of liars. When we're talking about change management, okay, this is huge. And IT, I mean, traditionally, IT departments are 3, 5, maybe 10 years ahead of the game in terms of what legal's doing. And I'm sorry, it's just the nature of what our businesses are. And God bless IT for being ahead of it. And God bless legal for being very thorough and analytical. We need everyone.
You're welcome. We are the best.
This is a point of contention all the time, where we're changing applications, we're changing devices, and we're not letting people know. We're not involving attorneys when it's on legal hold, etc. Major problem. So 3 more challenges before I promise I will shut up about all the challenges. I feel very negative right now. One challenge, of course, is an obvious, the ever-changing, ever-growing landscape of data. I mean, oh my God, nobody has to worry about the amount that storage costs us anymore. So all of a sudden it's like a free-for-all. It's like, I don't know, save everything. Who the fuck cares?
Bunch of hoarders.
Yeah. Did I say training? Training is huge. Who the heck cares about what your policies are if nobody knows what the policies do and nobody knows how to actually implement that in their everyday life or how it affects them? Most training should be happening in a lot of different ways. Onboarding, there should be quarterly training. There should be places where you can go download training if you're curious, etc. And the last one I'll mention is remote work. Remote work is a cause for a lot of problems when it comes to InfoGov because people are constantly doing no-no things like sending themselves emails that are, you know, to their personal email or printing things on their personal printer or all the things that you do when you're working from home because you don't have the resources that you have in the office, which I get all of that. So I feel like I've gone on and on, and hopefully I didn't lose all of our listeners.
No, I love it. So let's talk about what happens if you don't do any of this. Like, what if you just blow it off? And there are a couple consequences that can happen. They're going to sound familiar to those of you who have listened to our podcast before, but they are, first of all, sanctions. You could get sanctioned legally for failing to preserve data. If your data is regulated, you could get fined for noncompliance. There's also reputational damage that can happen if you just don't comply with the law. These organizations are branded as sketchy or inept or whatever, what have you, right? There's reputational damage when you just don't dot your I's and cross your T's. Then there's also just like, you could let the bad guys get away. Maybe you had data that would have really helped you. For whatever reason, your InfoGov policies just aren't up to snuff. And so you let data slip through the cracks that could have been really helpful. So let's talk about some strategies for overcoming these compliance challenges so that you don't get fined or sanctioned or be labeled sketchy or inept. So first of all, have a flexible InfoGov framework. Have something that is structured enough that people kind of know where to go, but flexible enough that it can adapt to the different specific requirements of different jurisdictions or different types of data. Second thing I'll suggest is have centralized oversight with local expertise. You want somebody steering the ship, right? You want a captain of your ship, but then you might need people who specialize in specific aspects of it. So that might mean if you have a global information governance policy, then maybe you need somebody who specializes in like United States law versus Chinese law versus European law, but they all kind of report up to the same person. So there is someone or some group of people who have visibility into what your org is doing with their data. Lastly, I'll say have technology in place. The volume of data that we have, the varied kinds of data that we have, all of this necessitates an advanced data management system. All of this necessitates advanced compliance tools. And all these will help you automate your processes, monitor the data that's coming in, the data that's going out, and ensure that you're adhering to any legal requirements that apply to that data, whether that be a legal hold, a regulation, some sort of law, your business practices, whatever it is. Having technology in place that is doing that, that's kind of taking the laboring oar, if you will, can really give you real-time alerts and reporting on the status of your data that will help you manage any kind of associated compliance risks. I think, Bree, that's all I had on my docket today. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've done a fairly decent job at outlining InfoGov and what it is. And like we said, tune in because we are bringing a guest who is going to walk through InfoGov, data governance, and talk about a real life team who I have to say, I mean, y'all know I'm old as hell and I've been around a long time in eDiscovery. Their team is the most successful team I have ever encountered in real life that has actually accomplished the cross communications, implementing policies and follow them, and works in harmony with IT and legal and compliance. Oh my God, it's beautiful. Yeah, it's like, I don't even know what happens over there. I mean, they must have a lot of pumpkin spice lattes and I have no idea. But we're looking forward to talking with our special guest soon. So stay in tune for that. And if you are really into InfoGov and are thinking like, dude, I want more. I want more information. I want to get all into this. This is an angle that you can take that is super valuable to you in your career. I mean, privacy, information governance, compliance, all of that is huge. It's huge. And there's so many resources out there, and there are professionals that, like, this is all they do every day. And
I mean, think about it. Like, do you enjoy like cleaning out your fridge, organizing your pantry, redoing your closet? Then InfoGov might be for you. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And please, please, please give us a review. We'd also love it if you could share this podcast with three other people in your life this week. That's a challenge to you. Challenge extended. So please tell your friends and family and coworkers about us. And of course, please hit us up. We're available at LinkedIn or on our website, which is www.ediscoverychicks.com. Send us your thoughts, your questions, and your drink recommendations. Until next time.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.